Let's look at the Shema in some depth and see how it achieves these goals. If you have the Art of Amazement Handbook, you'll find it on page 133 of the Pocket Size Handbook, the original edition. It is in the middle of chapter 6, subheading the Jewish Mission Statement. If you don't have it, you can maybe write down these 6 words. It doesn't matter if you write them in English letters or Hebrew letters. The 6 words are as follows. The first word is Shema. Second word is Yisrael. Adonai. Eloheinu. Adonai. Echad. It has been pointed out to me that if you count the syllables in the Shema, it could be read as a haiku. What the spiritual significance of that is, I'm not sure. I'll leave that for you to ponder. Let's look at each word. The first word is Shema. What does it mean? Well, simply, it means hear, as in listen, or hear with the ears. Lishmoa means to hear. But the rabbis tell us that here, Shema, Lishmoa, actually has 3 meanings. One, it means to hear something with your ears. Two, it means to understand. Right? When I can say to you, did you understand what she said? Oh yeah, but did you hear her? Meaning, did you really hear her? Did you hear it on a gut level? Meaning, it can also mean to internalize. It can mean to hear something, to get the information. It can mean to understand the information. It can mean to really internalize it. Those are 3 levels of meaning. And this word, the way it's written, Shema, as opposed to Tishma or other forms of the verb, is written as a command, an imperative. We are being told, or we're telling ourselves, or we're telling somebody, hear, as a command. What's the next word? Yisrael. What does Yisrael mean? In English, it is translated as Israel. Yisrael is the name Israel. What does that mean? When we say Shema Yisrael, are we talking to Israel? We're talking to, what does that mean? We're talking to the Jewish people? If we're talking to the Jewish people, we should really shout it out then, because, boy, there's a lot of Jews, and they're all over the world. So if I really feel like I'm talking, if I'm talking to the Jewish people, I should be shouting out the Shema so that all of Israel can hear me. Indeed, there's a synagogue in Jerusalem where you go in there in the evening, you'll hear about 1,000 people, a lot of kids, shouting out the Shema. They take it maybe quite literally there. But most of us don't relate to the word that way, that we're really talking to the Jewish people when we say that. Perhaps we do. Let's look at where the word comes from. Yisrael is the second name of the patriarch Jacob. When does he get the name Yisrael? Under what circumstances? The story goes, this is in the Torah, book of Genesis. At one point, Jacob has an all-night wrestling match with an angel, with a divinely sent spiritual messenger, if you will. He wrestles with him. At the end of the fight, who wins? Not so clear. Could be Jacob does. Could be it's a draw. And the angel says to him, your name is no longer going to be Jacob, but it's going to be Yisrael, meaning Yisra, you've one who's wrestled with the infinite, and you've done pretty well. That's what Yisrael really means. That's what Israel means. One who wrestles with the infinite, one who wrestles with God, as it were. Therefore, when you say Shema Yisrael, who are you talking to? Are you talking to all the Jewish people? You're talking to yourself. Each one of us is a Yisrael. Each one of us is meant to be one who struggles with the infinite, wrestles. That's the essence of being a Jew. That's the essence of what makes a person a Jew. It does also characterize some non-Jews as well. But I'm talking right now about what this word means. That's what Yisrael means. So Shema Yisrael, I'm telling myself something. And therefore, we see how this is really truly a meditation. The next word, Adonai, is a bit of a nickname we use for the four-letter name in Hebrew, which is considered unpronounceable. It is the name which should call to mind the infinite source of everything, omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, past, present, future, was, is, always shall be, beyond space and time, everywhere, everything, all the time, master of everything. That's what that word should call to mind, all those ideas. It's a big word. It's a heavy word. That's why we use a nickname, by the way. We don't pronounce the name because our attitude towards it should be, like, who am I to pronounce that name? Who am I to relate to that reality, to that infinite reality with such intimacy that I could even say its name? So we give it a nickname. In fact, we're so careful about it, we don't even say the nickname except in the context of, say, the Shema or other liturgy. Instead, when we're just referring to it, the custom is to say the name. Refer to it as just the name. In Hebrew, that's Hashem, Hashem. That's what Hashem means. The name Hashem means the name. That being the essence and the core of Jewish thought, Jewish philosophy, Jewish belief, Jewish practice, and Jewish history, we approach that name with great reverence and great care. But when we say the Shema, we say Adonai, and that's what we should have in mind, that infinite source. The next word, Eloheinu. We did define this, by the way, in part one of the Art of Amazement series, means that which is really running the world, the manifest power of the infinite in the world, which is really making things happen. The reason a bracha is said in the present tense, borei priya eitz, creating this fruit, and not created the fruit, is because it's happening all the time. It's continually being made. It's continually being sustained because the infinite source is, by definition, outside of time. Time only began in the Big Bang and therefore is not locked into the time perspective we are, where fruit had a beginning and a middle and end of its existence. It's always a beginning. It's always creating it, always making it happen. If it ceased to make something exist for any moment, that thing would cease to exist. And so it's the power that, you know, that runs nature, the true force behind nature. People refer to Mother Nature. That's a way of avoiding, in a sense, maybe not intentionally, but they're avoiding acknowledging that there's really an infinite source to that, which is really making nature happen. So we say, Adonai Eloheinu, we are saying that this infinite is the true force in nature. And the last line, the last two words, Adonai Echad, we're saying that that infinite source is Echad. Echad, we mentioned before, means one. What does that mean? The infinite is one. It's one what? It's one of many? No, it means absolutely one, the one and only. There is nothing else. Now, let's go back a little bit and try to put this all together and see how this works. First, go back to the word Shema. Why would the Torah, in teaching this meditation, teaching these words, why would the Torah use the word Shema as opposed to see or consider or, hey, think about this, or meditate on this, or ponder the following? Why here? Well, remember how we defined here. We defined it as not only listen with your ears, but also understand, but also get into your gut. Now let's put this into sort of colloquial English and think about it for a second. When in our everyday language would we ever say to somebody, listen, understand what I'm about to tell you, and get it into your gut? Like, when would we ever say that phrase to somebody? It's a very, very strong expression. I don't think I'd say it to, you know, I don't think I'd say to my son, you know, listen and get into your gut, brush your teeth. I mean, I wouldn't speak to him that way. When would I speak to him that way? When what I'm about to tell him is what? really, really, really important. Like, crucial. It'll save his life, right? Listen and get into your gut. Do not drink nuclear waste. Well, yeah, that's really important, but the point is, I use that example to illustrate that it's not enough for something to be really, really important to use that expression. It also must be not so obvious, right? I don't have to tell my son, you know, to say to him, listen and get into your gut, hear and understand what I'm saying. Don't swallow pencils. I don't have to tell him that because he knows it. I might have to remind him, but I don't have to use that kind of strong language. It has to be something that is not only very, very important, but also something that is not so obvious, subtle. Do those two characteristics characterize the rest of the Shema? Adonai Eloheinu, that the infinite is what's really running the world? First of all, is that really important to know? I guess that's your call. Judaism says it is. Is it really, really subtle? Yeah, it's totally subtle. It's totally unobvious. I mean, I don't see an infinite running the world. I see randomness, if anything. I see market forces. I see the evil empire. I see the big business. Whatever you see around the world, people don't perceive an infinite running the world, most people. It's not something we normally perceive. And therefore, we have to tell ourselves, focus on this subtle, important idea. How about the second idea? Adonai Echad, that the infinite is all there is. What could be more unobvious than that? I see multiplicity around me. I see thousands and millions of details in this world. I don't see oneness at all. It is the most unobvious thing to see. It is completely counterintuitive. And therefore, I need a meditative device, some kind of tool to help me internalize and be real with this. And that's indeed what the Shema is and does and can do. In fact, the Torah, when it teaches us the Shema, it tells us how to use it. How to use it, does it say? It says, say the Shema properly first thing in the morning and last thing in the evening before go to bed. In the morning, the evening. Frame your day with it. You know what? You cannot maintain throughout the day always that sense of, yeah, there's this infinite run in the world, this infinite God running the world. And you cannot always maintain that sense of oneness. You can't. You can't live that way. We have to deal with the multiplicity of the world. But we can frame our day with it. We can say it first thing in the morning. And we can say it in the evening before we go to bed. And we can, hopefully, that framing will start to seep into our awareness throughout the day.